Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Every adult needs some paperwork and legal documentation to protect their interests as well as the interests of their family. What kinds of documents and why are they important? Let's go in depth with Attorney Jim Hicks from Knoxville. So, Jim, do people come to you regularly regarding papers that they should have?
Yes, in small town general practice, that's probably the meat and potatoes of what we advise people on regarding what they should have at a minimum. And we usually tell them they should have a basic will or a trust to transfer their assets to whomever they wish, along with two powers of attorney, what I call a business power of attorney, also called a durable general power of attorney, and a living will medical power of attorney. Those are the three documents that we deal with quite a bit on a regular basis.
What's the difference between a will and a trust?
Okay. Basically, a trust is a document that you can create through a will, or you can create it while you're living. A trust is merely indicates what entity owns your assets or controls your assets. And a trust is monitored by a trustee. So you could set up the Bob Leonard Trust, and for example, and have yourself as a trustee. And if I wanted to buy your car, and your car was in the trust, it wouldn't be from Bob Leonard. It would individually be from the Bob Leonard Trust and you as trustee. And you can set up terms in that trust. For example, one of the terms could be, no, you can't sell your car, for example. But the trust is a device. There are a lot of trusts out there that you can purchase, but we always figure that they ought to be at least reviewed by an attorney. A will basically is a document signed and witnessed by two independent witnesses that will distribute your property through the probate court.
Okay, and so with a will, there's the dispensation of wealth, I presume, and then with a trust, it might continue, might be set up to continue to give for different length of time?
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. A will will, and sometimes in the will, there will be a trust that's set up. For example, the will might say, I want my executor to transfer everything to a trust that I have created, or we will create a trust in the will. Both of them have similarities, but they're fairly different in the way that they are mechanized or the way they operate.
Are there different tax advantages? Is that why people do them?
There can be different tax advantages. The biggest savings on setting up a trust may be in the probate fees and the executor fees and those type of things. But trusts are set up for a variety of different reasons. There may be second marriages, you set up a trust. Or perhaps you want to continue a business or farm operation, so you'll set up a trust. You may set up a trust to take advantage of what existing deductions there may be to not have the entire estate, for example, taxed all at once. So if you have 100 different people, you'll have 100 different reasons and you know, for setting up either a trust or a will. But there's a lot of reasons. That's why I think it's good to see an experienced attorney on to accomplish exactly what you do want.
So what happens? Somebody walks in and they say, hey, Jim, I suspect I need to get some paperwork in line. Can you tell me some of the things I need?
Yeah. Basically, what I like to do is find out what the people own and, more importantly, how they own it. Is it jointly owned, or are your kids on a bank account, those type of things. Find out what the person has and how it's owned, and then just kind of listen to them and see if they don't really care, what happens to their estate once they're gone, if it just goes to the kids, and the kids can do whatever they want to with it. Or they might say, you know, I'd like to preserve it and make sure my kids get it for their life, and then go down to the grandkids. And then so you discuss with them if they would like a basic simple will, or maybe if they want a trust to kind of accomplish what they have in mind.
Now, how come I can't just write down on a sheet of paper what I want and sign it? Give it to a buddy.
You could do that. What you'd want to do is have a couple of your buddies, if you can round up a couple buddies, or you want to have a couple buddies to witness it. Uh-huh. And as long as it's writing and you declare it to be your last will and testament, and you halfway know what you're doing and it's witnessed, you can do that. And there's a lot of wills that are on the internet that people will use, people will bring in a will that they've actually made themselves or got off the internet, for example. We'll look it over, make some suggestions and changes, because it can be a little risky on wording. One of the biggest mistakes on homemade wills is that people will use language where they think it might end up going to a grandchild, for example. If a child would pass away, does that share go to the grandchild? And if they don't use the right wording under Iowa law, that may not happen. So your wills on the internet are probably good starters, but you'd want to see a competent attorney, I think, to really make sure it complies with what you want and the Iowa law.
Well, yeah, and I sort of said that, you know, just as a point to start talking about it, but it seems like that's some of the dangers you run into in legal complicated documents. It's like it's tough to sell your own house, too. You need to know somebody that knows all the ins and outs.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's what some professionals are out there for. And we're lucky in this community. We've got the professionals that will assist people and accomplish what they do want.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with attorney Jim Hicks. And so the other documents that you talked about a living will.
Okay. Yeah, the two power of attorneys, I'm going to talk about the general business power of attorney first, but
sure.
A lot of people will come in on that. Your business power of attorney is called a general or plenary all-powerful power of attorney. It's a good document in Iowa because you can appoint somebody to act on your behalf, and it doesn't declare you to be incompetent or take anything away from you. It just places with a trusted person the right to carry on your business. The good thing about Iowa law, due to a change in the law several years ago, is that if you give someone the authority to act for you and you become incompetent, that power of attorney is still good. It used to be that if I gave you authority to act for me, Bob, and I became incompetent, your authority was done too. So you'd have to go to court. And people said, well, that's not really what we had in mind. So the business power of attorney is good, and that's why it's called the durable. It will endure past your incompetency. I've got three or four power of attorneys. I give one to my wife, one to the secretary, one to someone in Des Moines, and just to give them authority to carry on my business. The living will medical power of attorney, there's a little paragraph that says, don't keep me artificially alive. You make that decision. Then you appoint certain people to act on your behalf to carry out your wishes. The saying, you know, these people that you appoint do not make the decision to pull the plug, as the saying goes, but they do have the authority to confer with the doctor and carry out your wishes. And I think as soon as a person turns 18, those are two documents that they should have. And I did have a couple of young schoolgirls come in, the youngest clients I've had, and made a living will medical power of attorney because they learned at college, well, they could be in a car wreck, and so they prepared those. So everybody should have those regardless of age.
So once you're 18, come in and set it up.
Well, that most people would have other priorities, but it's a good thing to have.
What proportion of people, just guesstimate for me, what proportion of people have those?
I think it's pretty high and pretty common. The hospitals and the medical people will strongly encourage the living will and medical power of attorney. So, and that is the one document that I think, if it's prepared outside of a lawyer's office, is probably okay. I would say over half the people have those documents, the living will, medical power of attorney. The business power of attorney is usually triggered by an occasion where you think either mom or dad, for example, may be slipping a little bit, and then you try to get that power of attorney made before they become incompetent. Because once they're incompetent, the power of attorney can't be signed. You have to resort to a conservatorship and through the court. The drawback on a power of attorney for a lot of people is there's no accounting to other people. if you have a conservatorship through the court, it's monitored and there's a little bit more accounting than a power of attorney. So you better trust the person to whom you give your power of attorney.
Because they could cause some trouble, some shenanigans?
The thing is, there's just no accounting as there is in a conservatorship. A conservatorship, you'd have to give an annual report and say, hey, judge, this is what money I took in and this is what I did. You don't have to do that under a power of attorney.
So do you encourage people to get a conservatorship instead?
No, I don't. You know your clientele and you know who you can trust and what the situation is. I have advised some people for their own protection to take out a conservatorship so it's monitored by the court in case other brothers or sisters might question what's going on. But you kind of know your clientele and advise them what you think will work.
And so you look at internal family dynamics and decide who's the troublemaker or who might be?
Yep, that's right. Like they say in the music, man, you got to know the territory.
And so how do you learn that?
Listening to the client a lot of time and most of the people that come in, you can trust and you know them. Like I said, after being in the community about 40-some years, you kind of know who's who and what's going on. But when in doubt, I can say, I don't think I'm going to execute this, and they can go elsewhere. Sometimes they do.
Now, why wouldn't you want to do that?
Oh, just wouldn't want to be called into court as a witness and say, well, Dr. Bob Leonard didn't seem to really know what he was doing that day, but I executed it anyway, or whoever he appointed was someone that I thought maybe wouldn't be too trustworthy, and I don't want to get in that situation.
So if you're not clear on the relationships or what they have in mind.
Yeah, right.
Okay, and so do you ever get into any situations where a person is sort of distrustful of everybody around them and they don't want to give that business power of attorney?
Oh, yeah, and that's when a good example of when you do a conservatorship. And you petition the court, and this individual would have someone to act as a conservator, and it could be a bank. A lot of times banks are conservators for people, and then they'll take care of the assets and take the money that comes in and pay the bills, and each year they go to the judge and say, Judge, we took in X dollars and we spent the following, and the judge looks it over, and you have a kind of a checks and balances monitoring system of it. And so, yeah, you kind of the practice of law is as much an art as you go with your instincts a lot of times, I'll tell you that.
And so I presume in that situation the bank gets paid to do that.
Yeah. There's fees associated with any type of conservatorship. Interesting you bring it up. With a power of attorney, whoever acts on behalf of the individual is not allowed to receive any compensation. You can be reimbursed for expenses, but not for compensation, unless you have some certain language in there. This is being reviewed by the Bar Association because it's a little bit too restrictive. You know, a mother may give the son, say, you be my power of attorney and, you know, pay yourself and take care of what you need. But technically, that can be a violation if you pay yourself, and even though that's what mom or dad may want you to do. So the Bar Association is taking a look to try to remedy that and not make crooks out of a lot of people that are innocent and just doing what mom and dad wanted. So I'm going to keep my eye on that.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with attorney Jim Hicks. And so some people might take advantage of mom and dad. Does that ever happen?
Oh, elder abuse is something that the Department of Human Services and the county attorney keeps an eye on. And if you get on the internet and read some of the elder abuse stories, yeah, you'll see some things that will just scare the daylights out of you. But most of the people are kind of innocent. They get innocently trapped into misusing the funds at times.
Okay, so we're talking not physical abuse. It's
called financial elder abuse.
Real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite a growing area. In other words, if I'm going to put you in charge of looking out for me and my finances, you need to be very, very careful in what you do. You need to act on my behalf and not do anything on your behalf.
Is that a problem? Common problem?
It's not a common problem, but it does arise occasionally.
I bet when people walk in here, you just might know whether to suspect whether or not that might happen.
Yeah, you never know for sure, but you kind of have an idea. But like I said, most of the people that, quote unquote, may violate that type of relationship do it on an innocent basis. I mean, you know, mom said we could do it, and mom would say, yeah, go ahead and do it. But you got to be real careful on that.
And that's why they need to be talking to an attorney.
Yeah, get checked with an attorney and make sure we carry out what their wishes are. But the power of attorney, you want to, again, have a trustworthy person involved in that. And another way you could actually transfer property, I wanted to mention that, is some people will do it on a deed. They'll just transfer a deed, for example, to their children, use a deed to transfer the house to the children, for example, and then they'll keep the right to live in the house for their life, and you've kind of locked it in there. You can pass property on by joint tenancy, joint bank account ownership, and payable on death, they call it transfer on death, and all of those have certain legal implications and significance that can be beneficial to what the individual wants or can totally disrupt an estate plan. So talk a little bit with your financial advisors and kind of make sure the attorney has an overview of what you've done.
Well, I suspect there are tax advantages or disadvantages along the way.
Yeah, there are, and it would depend upon if you get an annuity, you know, if you advise your client to get an annuity and there's the taxes deferred, you want to make sure that the beneficiary knows that eventually those taxes got to be paid. And a joint tenancy ownership, for example, if a person has joint property, which a lot of people, husband and wife, have, that may not be subject to debts if one of them dies. A payable on death account may be. Just some of the finer points that you want the people to know, which is the reason that I have them bring in a list of what they have and how it's owned. That's the key.
Like car, house, trailer,
right,
whatever.
And if they say, oh, we got the house, we got both names on it, well, that doesn't tell me anything. Both names and how? Is it both names with joint tenancy right of survivorship or just both names, which can mean you own half and the spouse owns half? So it's real important to get all of that lined up.
I bet a lot of us don't even know what we've got.
That's right. I hear it all the time where I say, how's this owned? And the answer is, we got both names on it, or both our names. Well, you got to take the next step to find out exactly how it's owned and the wording.
Amazing how we can forget we signed those documents, but we forgot what we signed.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Anything else financially that people might want to know about?
Oh, I think one of the things you want to pay a little bit of attention to, and we were talking about trusts earlier, be real careful about any trust that you do get online or that's a packaged type trust deal, because people think that if I put all my property in a trust, then it's protected, and perhaps if I go to a nursing home, the fact that it's in a trust, then it's all protected, and it doesn't work that way. So you've got to know the strengths of the trust and what the trust is to accomplish. But it's a lot of misconception that when people especially are looking at going to assisted living or nursing home, that they can have a trust and they can have all of their assets, yet have the taxpayers pay for their medical assistance because they don't own it. It's in a trust. Well, it's not quite that easy.
So just best to avoid the internet is what you're saying?
No, not avoid it, but you can get a lot of ideas. I check the internet a lot, you know, just to see what's floating around out there and to get ideas. But bring it into somebody that you trust, attorney or accountant, and have them look at it and see that it does meet exactly what the person wants to do, and not to be misled by a trust that will help you avoid taxes and all of that. Make sure it does. By the way, the trust laws are slowly evolving into having the same probate procedures as a will. If you notice in the paper, you'll see if someone's passed away and you're probating a will, there's a notice that's published. The trusts are slowly coming under the same jurisdictional guidelines and requirements because too many people were avoiding their obligations and taxes by trying to put everything into a trust and not reporting anything. So slowly those trusts are coming under some of the same scrutiny and requirements of the wills and the probate.
So just another reason to be talking to someone in town.
Right.
Wherever you live.
Right, yeah.
And knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
And so what's enjoyable about this kind of work to you?
Well, what's enjoyable to me is just being here in Knoxville, a county seat town. I grew up down in Red Oak, which is also a county seat town. Was going to go back there and then married Mr. Johnston, who was the boss of the law firm, and he said, why don't you stick in Knoxville? This was about 40 years ago. And not to be too trite or a cliche, but the thing I like the best is just the small town atmosphere and meeting with people and trying to help them out. You know, when you do an adoption or if you do probate an estate or if you help somebody in a personal injury accident, that is satisfying to say, okay, I really made a difference to that person's life, helped them out. And I can weather all the attorney jokes in the world. I mean, I kind of laugh along with them too. But that's the most important thing. I mean, I grew up in a small town, like a small town, got good people to work with around here at the courthouse and the realtors and fellow attorneys. And so that's just not a cliche. That's what I like doing. I'll be 65 here my next birthday, and I'm still hopefully going strong. So good place to be.
Thanks to Jim Hicks for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.